Everyone, and welcome to Rewatchable episode 258, where we are talking about Angel season 5 episode 3 Unleashed and season 5 episode 4 Hellbound. My name is Caitlin, and I am joined today by only two other people. I'm joined by newbies Brittany and Mitch. Hi everyone.
Hello.
All right, so before we get into discussing the episodes this week, just a reminder of how you can get in touch with us. You can email us at rewatchable.podcast@gmail.com, tweet us at @re_watchable, comment on this post on hypable.com, and find us on Tumblr at rewatchablepodcast.tumblr.com. So to get us started, as usual, we're going to get you used to the sounds of our voices with some fun facts for the week. Brittany, let's start with you.
All right, so my fun fact is Angel related because I can't be on the podcast for the next two weekends. I, due to like other plans, I get to watch 6 episodes of Angel in a row, which is like basically living the dream. So it's as close
to
living.
But you're almost done. Like if you do that, you're getting close to the end.
It'll be halfway, I think. So it'll take me to episode 10.
I'm scared to be done. I don't know how my life is going to be after these shows are done.
No, it's a lot to handle. The end is near, which, like, I felt it with Buffy, but now it's, like, really real because I feel like watching two Angels in a row is, like, making us, like, power through Angel. And
it is.
It's really weird. Although, I guess for the whole last season of Buffy, I really only talked about Angel, so I'm, like, back in my element now. But yeah, so I'm looking forward to that. I'm looking forward to just, you know, binging a little bit, which I haven't been able to do much of. So looking forward to just lounging and watching Angel.
Brittany is living her best life. Mm-hmm.
See, I don't get that luxury ever because if you're writing show notes as a newbie, you can't watch too far ahead. And if you watch too early, you might forget. And then you have to just read the transcript, so you're like watching the episode all over again. So it's a luxury that I'm jealous of, Britt.
Yeah, I watched these episodes really early. Like, I guess as soon as we finished and I knew I wasn't going to be on last week, I watched them almost immediately. And then this morning when I went to go fill out the doc, I'm like, wait, what happened in these episodes?
Yeah, that happens. That happens to me sometimes. Sometimes, though, I find I write my best show notes when I don't know what's going on.
Oh, well, that's good.
Yeah. Not the case here, unfortunately. I'm very full well aware of the werewolf subplot here.
All right. And Mitch, what's your fun fact this week?
My fun fact is, yes, Britt, I did finish American Horror Story Roanoke, and you're right, it does get really bad. I don't know what I was saying. I don't think I actually liked it anymore. I think I was just so relieved that it was done, and I was like, oh, this feels great. Oh, it's because I don't have to watch it anymore.
Yeah, so, and then Mitch mentioned to me, he's like, I'm going to wait until Cult comes on Netflix, and I, because I didn't watch Cult, I literally had to Google it. I was like, wait, as you were typing, I'm like, American Horror Story Cult. And I looked and I saw like Evan Peters with his blue hair. And I'm like, oh, that one. Like, I've been so checked out of American Horror Story that I forgot that Cult was a thing because I watched the first episode and then I was like, nope, I'm going to cut this out of my life and be happy. So I'm looking forward to your commentary, though, because I'm going to just have you talk at me so I don't have to watch it.
Yeah. I like doing that, too, with like The Walking Dead, for instance. I listen to a podcast specifically because their commentary, it's a Bald Move podcast, if anyone's curious. But their commentary is better than the show, and it makes it more amusing, and their summaries are much more accurate, much like we're about to do with this 503 episode of Angel. Like, when an episode sucks, like, they find, like, other and more important and, like, good things to talk about because the episode just doesn't have substance sometimes. And, yeah, that's probably what I'm going to get at with you. Whenever they have like another Broadway star come on, I'll be like concentrated on that as opposed to the actual plot of Cult.
All right. My fun fact this week, it was going to be that baseball is back and I am just so happy. It was opening day on Thursday and it's the most wonderful time of the year. But then Brittany reminded me that last night I had an Angel dream.
Oh, okay.
I dreamed that I was literally watching Angel and The only thing I really remember about it is that at some point Angelus must have been there because Angel gets his soul back. And then he says, like, he gets his soul back and goes, did anyone else notice the world, like the weight of the world fall right around my hair?
That's a good one-liner.
That's so great.
And that's like the only thing I remember about it. But I woke up and being like, my subconscious was excited to watch Angel and he's snarky even in my dream. And that's delightful. So
that is lovely.
Dreaming about my boy, apparently. So, all right, let's have a short discussion about 503 and then we can talk about a really delightful episode in 504. So 503 Unleashed. In this episode, there is an overtly sexualized werewolf lady subplot to supplement the fact that the pancakes have finally come back together to form the lettuce wraps. So, yeah, let's just say that this is a episode about a werewolf and no mention of Oz, no Seth Green anywhere. I was at least hoping they'd mention him.
Even like a van reference, like I wouldn't, just something to acknowledge that, like, you know, you've met and dealt with a werewolf before. I mean, they say it like in not so many words that like, oh, like this is what we should do with a werewolf. But I'm like, okay, you have like, you can make a reference here and just make fans happy. Even if you acknowledged like just the name Oz.
I was expecting a line like, I had a friend who was a werewolf and he lived his life or something, you know, and that I would have been happy with.
Oz has even specifically been on Angel back when Angel got the ring that he crushed. But like Oz was a part of that. And then they're just pretending like it was like Angel was strung up. Spike was torturing him. There was a whole thing. And they just pretend like it never happened here.
Yeah, that was very odd that there was no mention of Oz. So,
like, wouldn't that be the whole point of this episode, to only bring in werewolves again if you're going to bring in Oz again? If at least in reference, but like, why not bring him on as a guest star here?
Mm-hmm.
It was weird. This is so strange. I don't know. I'm really not happy with this episode. It feels like we're back to the place where we were with Buffy, where like last season, oh, let's do like a filler episode. We're like, I don't even know. Like, Rat 80 was kind of a filler episode, to be honest. But yeah, I wish they would just get to the meat of it all.
But at least, like, Rat Amy had a character that you could be excited about. This episode literally had nothing. Like, it was, I thought the scene in the beginning was cute when they were, like, all kind of meeting up outside and, like, you know, trying. They're still, it kind of showed that they're still adjusting to life within Wolfram and Hart, and they don't necessarily know how to like get around all the red tape that kind of encompasses that building. So they have to like go off and figure out how to talk, which I think actually was pretty interesting. And they're all not on the same page, which like there's still some disconnect between them. And I thought that was a good moment, but then the rest of it was just like, why are we doing this?
You know, it feels like him, the jacket episode from season 7 of Buffy, then. That kind of filler episode is how I'd define those.
Oh, I wouldn't go that far.
No? I don't know.
That episode was offensive. I at least thought this episode had some themes it was trying to play with.
Yeah.
Maybe not successfully, or I guess my thought is more, they were obviously playing with this idea of like living with the monster within. But we've done that story with Angel multiple times over the last 5 seasons. So it just sort of felt redundant to be doing it again. And I didn't really feel necessarily like Angel's at a place where he needed to have that hammered home. And I guess he didn't really even seem to be struggling with it. He was just being like, wise monster mentor. Like,
yeah. And I thought that was like, okay, but it felt like Angel wasn't even into it.
Mm-hmm.
Like, there was just no, like, he was sort of just like, oh, I guess I'll do this now. And, you know, in the next episode, we get that conversation between Spike and Angel about, like, you know, like, why are we doing this sort of thing? And, like, this episode felt like Angel was questioning, like, oh, like it was almost like a burden, like, oh, I guess I'll take care of this werewolf. Like, you know, I guess I owe it to some, like, it felt very out of place. And us watching this episode felt like a task. Like, it felt like this, getting through this episode felt like a task for the cast. I was like, why does this feel like such a struggle that no one literally wants to be anywhere doing anything?
Yeah, it's like they suffered through the whole Cordelia pregnancy, Jasmine, and then coma thing. They're like, okay, we're in the clear. Like, we're in a clean cut, new season. And then they come in with the werewolf episode. And it's like, ugh. Like, Angel's grumpy. He, like, snaps at Gunn. And it doesn't really make any sense to me. Because I'm like, why are you treating Gunn like that? He's being pleasant and, like, helpful. It was all just very weird.
Okay, here's my attempted thematic similarity. Nina, in becoming a werewolf, like, she gets very isolated. She's trying to do this whole thing by herself. Like, she almost, like, eats her niece. And so she's scared. She's, like, willing to be eaten by these people. This is kind of similar to Gunn, because no one's trusting him after he let the senior partners, like, mess with his brain. Mm-hmm. So he is kind of being isolated. Even Angel is kind of isolated himself since the Wolferman Heart thing started. So in that way, I can kind of seeing them playing with that. And then you get Nina going back to her family and kind of accepting this new monsterness as a part of herself. And at the end, you get the team coming back together as a family, kind of, I guess you could say, maybe for them, the werewolf for Nina is like the Wolferman Heart for them. Like, they're starting to become whatever it takes to exist in Wolferman Heart, and it's isolating them. So the way Nina goes back to her family, the pancakes come back together and are going to do this together, because you need the support to get through something like this. That's my attempt to make thematic significance.
You're selling it to me, honestly. And while you were talking too, I was starting to think of, like, how extra all this Nina stuff felt, and to the point where it almost felt like they were trying to build some kind of backdoor pilot here, kind of like the Jess episode where he goes to California, Brit, and Gilmore Girls, mm-hmm. except for there weren't enough minor characters in her life introduced. It's just that we focused so much time on, like, individual specific scenes of her alone outside of Angel Investigations, doing her own things, having her life, like, set up, that it was like, why are they doing so much with this character if they're just going to make it a one-off?
Yeah, it did feel like a lot of extra effort but in a way too, like, now that Caitlin has me thinking about this with an actual theme, like,
sorry,
you know,
about that.
No, it's okay. Like, you know, when you take, because Fred has been so, like, fried in the lab, and, like, she's with all these resources and stuff, but, like, getting her back out into the field in a way, like, you know, she takes Nina home and she has to deal with, like, her, like, these very human interactions. It's not just everything behind, like, a microscope or something, you know. She's back in the setting, I guess you could say, of how her life was before they moved into Wolferman Heart. And, you know, there's other things that she can be doing, and, like, ways to counter what's going on inside the walls of Wolferman Heart. Like, there's still a human element to the work that they're doing, and I think that is interesting to pay attention to too. Like, you know, there's more than their assigned roles inside Wolferman Heart that they can tap into still. It's like they're not just designated to be, like, you know, the lawyer and the scientist and, you know, I guess whatever Lauren is, agent, and then Wes's librarian or something. Like, they can exist outside of their designated roles. But their designated roles also help them, like Caitlin wrapped up very nicely saying, like, you know, contribute to their group. Like, they're in it together. Like, they balance each other out with their strengths.
You two just, like, outspoke me in a wonderful way. I'm so happy to be podcasting with two very intelligent people. Much smarter than me.
I did find Angel's choice at the end, I want to talk about this a little, to give that group Dr. Royce, like, after Nina bit him.
Mm-hmm.
Like, on the one hand, I don't feel that bad for him, because he literally gave these people an innocent girl to be eaten alive. Like, asshole. But but for Angel, I feel like it's showing a little bit of that corruption that maybe Wolfram and Hart engenders. And I wonder what you guys thought.
Yeah, like kind of like shotgun to the head of the guy that was going to kill all the kids in the school. Mm-hmm. Like, yeah, he had to kill him, but it was like a lot rougher than it had to be. Maybe not. It kind of seemed like a mercy kill, but still very like gruff is how I'd put all of this. Like, he just is devil may care at this point. I see that.
Doctor was going to like sit for a month knowing he's going to get killed and then get eaten alive. Like, that's horrific torture.
Yeah.
Angel's turning very eye for an eye, which I don't disagree with at all in his situations.
Yeah, and also, like, that kind of, like, harkens back to, like, his, in the past two episodes, his, like, inability to really make a call about Spike. Like, you know, like, there's, like, yes, we should kill him, oh, maybe not, oh, yes, we should, oh, maybe, like, he's in this limbo between existing and not existing, and like, you know, is it so bad for him to not exist anymore? And without talking about the next episode at all, just thinking back to the premiere and the second episode, it's just like there's lines that Angel, we see Angel crossing, but still that gray area where he's like, yes, he's taking action by like using the, albeit a very suave maneuver with the shotgun in that one episode. And then this decision, like, he's like, okay, I'm going to make a call here. And it feels like this one feels more merciful than the shotgun one, because the shotgun one, like, that guy was, like, clearly evil. But, you know, I don't know. I feel like Angel's trying to be bolder in his choices, and that's, I don't know if they're sitting well with him, that type of assertiveness and making that call, because he hasn't been able to make calls about certain things in even the past couple seasons. You know, it's always like, oh, well, you know, there's a lot of hesitation and feeling that comes with having a soul.
Yeah, he doesn't think so much anymore. He just acts, which I like too, because it gets kind of stale when that's all the characters wanted to do on Buffy and then Angel. And Buffy even got to that point, which was great. And now Angel seems like he's getting to that point, which is great. Maybe it's just like you have to be in your final season before you're ready to just not give a shit.
Well, it could also come from the fact too that, like, even playing off of the Buffy finale, you know, like, Buffy didn't choose him to save the world, but he should have, like, maybe he's feeling that weight of like, well, I should have just chosen it myself. I mean, granted, writing and production wise this would not have worked. Yeah. But, you know, they could be taking that into consideration with his character development in here, being like, oh, well, I can make choices and I can choose to make X, Y, and Z call. Like, a like Spike as a champion doesn't sit well with him. And so he's like, okay, well, I'm going to start making bolder moves and taking control of things and not letting people be like, no, no, Angel, go home.
Yeah. It was like, definitely an interesting choice to bring Angel over for the Buffy season finale. To not only mac on that warm cookie of Buffy, but also to give the amulet to then bring in Spike. That stuff, I don't know if I would have written it that way for the fact that I feel like it weakened Angel's resolve here. He has so much to care about, aka Cordy, on Angel. And then to bring in all of that struggle and to make it so that you're saying, right, yeah, like he's transformed from that finale. Like, he's just too busy. His character is way too much going on. He just lost Connor as well. Like, he's kind of becoming friends with Wes, and Fred kissed him, and he's angry at Gunn for some. Like, he has little interactions with so many characters, and it's so hard for a viewer to keep track of, I think, at times when you have not even just multiple characters, of course, but multiple shows with those characters to keep track of. So I'm feeling like a bit of fatigue, and maybe that's why Angel's grumpy, because he's just going through so much right now and he doesn't have time for it. He's like, I don't have time for this werewolf shit. Let's just move on, guys.
I just got splashed with Grouchy.
Yeah, that was cute.
I will say, I think part of this too is I think Angel gets so like single-minded on helping Nina because everything has been so messy. And the whole point of taking this deal at Wolfram and Hart was to use their resources to do good. Mm-hmm. And what good have they done at this point? None. Like every bit they've tried to do has ended up like messed up in some way. Like they rescued that kid, but he's like going with his awful dad. So, you know, things like that. So it seems to me like he gets really hung up on this idea of they have to help her and they have to put every single resource they have into helping her, because otherwise what's the purpose of having taken this deal that they took? Mm-hmm. And, yeah. And we know he took it to like give Connor a better life, but I think he needs more than that to continue on and feel okay about it.
Yeah. And like for a while, like when they first started here, like Angel couldn't even handle the clientele that were coming in, you know, like it was like, obviously they're demons coming in, but like, and they're evil outright, but he's just like beating them up as soon as they walk through the door. And it's like, well, that's one of like your biggest clients, you know? And so it's an adjustment of doing right, thinking what you're doing is right, but also not, it's not playing out the way you want it to. Like the whole necromancer thing was like a hot mess. And you know,
keyword hot with that shirt in Spangel.
God. Yeah, I don't know if I agree with Mitch that it's, I don't know if this is what you were saying, Mitch, though, but I don't agree that it's fatigue. It's not fatiguing me, I should say. This, like, all of this stuff that's weighing on Angel, including the Buffy stuff. Like, I actually think it's interesting, and it's adding, it is piling a lot on Angel, but I think, hopefully, it will pay off in, like, the coming episodes. Like, either Angel, not Angelus, I'm not rooting for an Angelus moment here.
No, yeah.
Just, like, completely focusing on an Angel character development. I think it's just going to be interesting for his storyline, and I think we'll touch better on it after we talk about the conversation that happened in the Definitely. Next episode.
Are you talking about the couch? You're talking about the couch.
Why would I talk about anything else ever again in my life?
Good answer.
We'll get there. I just want to point out that at the very end, they say that that group had been like shut down permanently. So maybe that doctor's not going to get eaten after all.
Oh.
Oh, yeah, so. You're right. So no just desserts for him.
But maybe Wolfram and Hart recovered him and they're like going to lock him away like they do the guy in the next episode.
Yeah. We gave you a window.
That's a whole thing. Yeah.
All right. Oh, one other thing. Wesley is jealous of Knox and Fred.
Oh, God, Wes. Stop trying to make this Wesley thing work.
Yeah.
Like, I know it's going to be a thing, and they're trying really hard, but I still just don't buy it.
Just.
You see Fred and Wes getting together.
I do, because they're making it so, like, why bother making this so overt in the last season and then this season?
Why do it at all? Why can't Fred just be single?
Well, that,
like, she doesn't seem to like him. She's like, you're condescending. Like, when he talks down to her about how she's speaking and like, oh, you're improving. It's like, oh, I hate the way he speaks to her. And he definitely objectifies her. But I don't think the show sees it that way. I think the show is like, it's quirky.
Yeah, I'm just not. Again, it's going back to like what we've been saying the entire time we've been watching Angel. Fred deserves better, a better storyline, better love interest. I mean, Gunn was great. I loved that. I even liked when they were breaking up. I thought that like it was, I mean, some parts of it weren't handled well, but like some of the aftermath was like when they finally talked. I thought that was done and written very well. But this Wes thing just hasn't felt right from the moment that they did randomly decided to introduce it.
Yeah.
Well, everything is going to feel weird because these characters aren't the full versions of themselves right now.
Mm.
They don't have all their memories.
That is very true.
Oh, yeah, that's weird. This Andy is Connor. So it's a reverse Dawn. Yeah, this is odd.
Ooh, a reverse Dawn. I like that.
Because how do you write or to a reverse Dawn? Like, it's easier to insert rather than to take away memories, because you're having, you have to like retcon so much that Connor did. He was so horrible to so many people. He caused so much trauma. Especially the West stuff. I think the West stuff is the strongest part because of the whole like holding her captive and then torturing her part. And like, how did Angel end up in the bottom of the well? Why? Or the ocean? Like, there's a lot of stuff that, because how did that still happen? Because it's an Angel's memory. I don't even know. This is just so weird.
Wesley in his memories never took that dark turn.
Yeah.
So okay. His personality is clearly lighter a bit than it was. It's kind of where it was getting towards the end. But in this case, it's not that he went dark and was starting to come back from it. He has no memories of going dark. Because there was that line, Angel had that line to Wesley, like, I don't remember, first or second episode, where he's like, wow, you've turned really fast, like faster than I was expecting, kind of referring to the fact that he didn't have his memories of doing it the last time.
Does this mean we have to erase Holtz coming back into the future too? Because he's so tied with Connor, and like, how do you explain his motivations without Connor being involved?
Well, technically, we don't need to erase anything because we're Angel in this perspective.
Yeah.
But we do have to look at Wes and pretty much everyone else in a different way, like with a filter on, I guess you could say. Because like, right. Wes, did he just like wake up like all of a sudden he's like still in like a leather jacket and like scruffy and he's like, you know what, I'll keep it, it's fine,
looking a little bit too rogue.
This is a natural progression of my character. I'm like, you probably would have been a little bit more clean shaven, but okay, you roll with that.
So who I don't even want to know what's going on with the whole Jasmine plot then, and then why Cordelia is gone. Oh god.
Well, Cordelia, they just say her, and like, they're not even, I don't even think they're gonna explain that. They're just going to say some comma. And the Jasmine thing, we don't ever need to figure out.
She's dead and gone. She's punched through the face by someone else. That's fine.
Yep, we're okay never talking about that again. We're okay never talking about a lot of things again, but particularly that.
Yeah, definitely. As beautiful as Gina Torres was, God. Just was not fun. Yeah, so I guess we're in this very strange place where I'm not really sure how to understand what you're saying, Caitlin, then the not full versions of these characters, especially Wes, as I keep saying, and this is going to be weird. I wonder how they're going to play it out. If they're going to reveal it, like everyone's going to waken up and understand. Yeah. Like, okay, Connor was a thing. Here are our memories back. A la Tabula Rasa with Willow. Who knows?
I don't know.
It can only get stranger from here. I know that much for sure.
I just feel like when looking at some of these character dynamics that we might think feel a little off, in some ways that might be purposeful, considering that the characters themselves are slightly off.
Wouldn't it make sense for him to just tell everyone now, like tell him everything? Like after the letter traps, he should have been like, okay guys, story time. So there was my son. Darla came back. Then she's dead, and then she came back again.
I mean, I still think there's something to the idea that like no one can know, because like, what if something happens to Angel? Like, Wesley is pragmatic enough to be like, well, we technically know there's a son of a vampire with superpowers out there that could be useful. Let's go find him.
Yeah, he could.
So I feel like it's probably best, at least from Angel's perspective, to keep everyone in the dark.
But haven't we been asking for this, Britt? I'm pretty sure you and I have had conversations before where we're like, they just need to hit the reset button because the Connor stuff is such a mess. And like, it's okay if there's still mess left over after him, but it's still better than living in the continued mess of Connor. Like, I'd rather clean up rather than having to continue to suffer through Connor. So I think I'm better off here.
That was the argument halfway through season 4.
We finally got our wish.
But they let us go for 14 more episodes.
Yeah, they did.
But yes, no, that definitely was the argument. But it's like it's one of those too little too late situations, I think.
You think? So you wish the Con Air race happened earlier is what you're saying?
Oh, much earlier.
Yeah.
But I'll take what I can get.
He's gone now, so yeah, we'll celebrate that fact.
All right, let's stop talking about Connor.
Yes.
He needs to stop bringing our show down.
Yeah. We're like, oh, werewolves. We don't want to talk about them. Let's discuss Connor. How can we make 503 worse?
He literally does not even exist on the show anymore. And we're still talking about him. Okay. Let's go to favorite scenes and favorite lines for this episode. My favorite scene, because Brittany took the objectively, or one of the best ones. Mine was just the group getting back together at the end and being adorable. And I liked Lauren being like Angel saying he was going to pay. And Lauren's like, hell really has frozen over. Like just their cute dynamic and seeing them all getting along. I highly enjoyed it. Mitch.
I really liked when Fred was pretending on the fly to be Nina's friend, because I thought that was good acting on the part of the character Fred. I wouldn't be able to be like that in the middle of a scenario, especially to someone as angry as Nina's sister was. So I thought that that was very smart of her, and I like that Fred is very resourceful like that. And I bought into her story. I always do whenever she comes up with these like fake personas for like undercover stuff.
All right, and Brittany.
Mine is when Angel gets offended that Nina thinks that he's the Frankenstein of the group, and he like instinctively rubs his forehead because he's very self-conscious about his forehead.
He's so cute.
He like got so offended too. He's just like, what? And I'm not the what vampire? And he's like touching his forehead.
So good. All right, favorite lines. Mine was Spike kind of coming in when they're dealing with the dead werewolf, and he's going, I had a wee spat with a werewolf myself once, fought for over an hour, brutal, vicious, almost lost my, and then Fred cuts him off and goes, Angel killed him with a pen. And his face just, ugh. I love it.
And I remember thinking, too, when, like, Wes was talking about the pen, he was, I'm like, why are you carrying that around with you? And then I was like, oh, well, this makes sense.
I loved how hyper-focused he was on how great his pen was.
I know. And he would be that excited about a pen. So,
yeah, that's cute.
All right, Mitch.
Mine was the fake plots that Spike made up, his backstory with Wesley that he probably wants to be true. It was a long time ago. He was a young washer.
Wait, are you kidding me?
What?
I put my lines in here hours.
Oh my God, you're right. You read it.
And you put the exact same thing.
That is funny. I think I read the end of years. My God, you're so full of crap part.
All right, then you read the Spike part and I'll read the Fred part.
Okay. It's actually very fitting then, isn't it? It was a long time ago. He was a young washer, fresh out of the academy when we crossed paths. It was a, what you call, battle of the wills. And blood was spilled. Vendettas were sworn. It was a whole...
My God, you're so full of crap.
Yeah, sorry.
It's fine. I just get to talk about the favorite scene in the next episode.
Yes, you did have mine. I didn't steal it. I just pointed to it. I couldn't take anything else.
I just love how Fred sees through him so completely.
Yeah, it was so great. This is like one of my, going to be, I think, one of my favorite like sparring pairs, because like Spike can eventually, like, he puts up, like, you know, those defenses of being, like, joking, mean, and then he's like, okay, I'll actually tell you what's going on. I mean, it takes a while to get there, but the fact that I think he's going to find a, whatever Spike's definition of friend is in Fred, I'm looking forward to hopefully seeing that actually happen. So, and this moment was great.
So good. I love Fred. I love her. All right, let's move on to 504, Hellbound, an episode I enjoyed immensely. We'll see how the newbies felt. In this episode, Spike is naked and almost goes to hell, but Fred stops the spooks that are haunting Blondie Bear just in time, which is a simplified way of putting it, yes. So this episode, I thought, did a really good job of playing with all the horror film tropes and creepiness and lights going down and people getting touched and no one being there. Like, I thought it was genuinely creepy in a lot of parts.
Yeah, it had some very like disturbing moments, especially like body horror, because there are a lot of horrific ways that these poor lawyers have died. I don't know if I should be saying poor lawyers. They're probably evil.
I mean, they were working for Wolfram and Hart.
Yep.
Yeah, like cutting his fingers off.
That was so creepy. And then when Spike like horrible. Goes back and he's just like, okay, I get it. Like, I know you're cutting your fingers off. Like, it's not freaky. We've done this bit before. And I'm still like, okay, but I can still hear it. And I don't want to hear it anymore.
Yeah, that was, I think that was a great way to start off the horror of this episode, because it was such a strong like sensory image, because it's almost like the sound is worse than the image itself from how like bumped up the sound of like them probably cutting carrots was.
Yeah.
It was very disturbing. It's almost like when you hear a watermelon squash, but it's put in a different context of like, you know, violence or something. It sounds so much worse, but it's really just a watermelon. So yeah, it was good.
Yeah. So this episode kind of focuses on Spike is like fading out more frequently and for longer periods. And he's really worried about like getting sent to hell before Fred can figure out how to save him, because Fred's kind of been pushing his case off to do other things. And she's like, oh, I'll do something. And then he's like, it's getting worse. Be nice if you could help me at some point. That'd be great. And so we see him, he finally kind of just disappears and no one can see him. And he's being haunted by specters. And it ends up that he's being haunted by this spirit of a mass murderer from the 18th century who is haunting Wolfram and Hart, which isn't that perfect. Like, a guy he was so evil that they sacrificed him to deconsecrate the ground that they were going to build Wolfram and Hart on. That's how evil this guy was.
I have a question. How come they couldn't find him when they were looking for the ghosts or any of his lackeys? Because they were like, yeah, we can't find Spike. We can't find any, we're only finding Spike. We're not finding any other ghosts in Wolfram and Hart. We just did a whole check. Like, he's there. He's very much a ghost. How is he? Is he just like so powered he hides from that?
Well, yeah, he talks repeatedly about how he bends reality to fit his own rules. He would just be disguising himself. The longer he's been there and the more souls he has preyed on, and what he has done is like all these lawyers that have died in the line of working for Wolfram and Hart, as Angel points out, there should be tons of them. So Wolfram and Hart should be like massively haunted, and it's not. He has been tormenting them, and then he sends them to hell to keep like hell from getting him.
He offers them as like sacrifice.
Yeah. But it increases his power as he does this. So he has gotten so powerful at this point that he's pretty much like this other existence or plane that he's on. He is able to manipulate reality around it. And so I'm sure that's how he's disguising himself.
The more we talk about him, the more he starts to feel like a adult version of a Power Rangers villain, because he's so like mustache twirly and like, I gain more power with each soul that I claim. Like, it feels very surface level, but I don't know if I'm meant to be feeling that way, because it felt like he was important, like he was going to stick around from that last look he gave. I don't know how to feel about this guy.
I liked him as a character, like as an antagonist for this episode, because not only did he bring up a lot of like interesting, like, you know, takes on what we're not looking for in Wolfram and Hart. Like, you know, like there's so much to Wolfram and Hart that just the building alone has all of this information that is yet to be uncovered, including the fact that, you know, there's this dead serial killer who just, you know, trades soul, like dead people for, you know, life. So it's like corrupted even in its ghosts. So like I liked that element of it, but I also just loved the character because I thought that he was creepy and he was almost everything I want. I kept thinking of this like the whole time I was watching him. I think it was honestly just the costuming. It, like he was everything I wanted Hyde to be on Once Upon a Time that never actually, or Jekyll, whichever one it was, which like never actually happened. So like he was just so ruthlessly evil and the taunting and just like, you know, making Spike like want to just be like, okay, yeah, hell's a better option than dealing with you and having the group have to like fight against a ticking clock that they can't see, like they can't see what's happening and they just have to like do something. I just thought it was a really great episode in total, mainly because of the way they wrote this villain. He was just so good. And I don't think he's going to stick around, but I think he opened up the door to other plot lines where like you don't know the whole story and they don't, like we've talked about this before, like we don't know the whole story of what Wolfram and Hart is. There's so many hidden, not like physical levels of the building, but also just like of everything that they've done in the past and everything that's still in motion for the future that's happening, and not just in the LA branch but every other branch.
You know, I think you've helped me analyze why I thought he was so cheesy, and I think I was meant to feel that way because his costume does look great when he's in the netherworld, whatever, fighting Spike. But then he looks like he has his pants around his ankles when he's thrown into the real world because, like, all of that under eye makeup, and even when he doesn't have any makeup on when he's put it in the jail cell, he just looks kind of silly and out of place. But I think he's meant to because I think it's meant to show, like, we took over, we conquered the bad guy. Like, he looked really evil and scary there, but what is he without his other world powers? He's really just a guy.
Mm-hmm. I think characters like this that are just so irrevocably evil always bring to mind to me the reminder that having a soul does not equal goodness, because he was a human being. Pavane was a person and he was that evil. And it's always some, I think, interesting first to compare to Angel and also now to compare to Spike, because we have these two vampires who are souled, and to see how that, you know, what it means to have a soul. I'm always interested when they bring in these so horrifically evil individuals, just as this reminder that people themselves, because this guy was a dude, he was just that horrible, as a reminder that people are just as bad. Sometimes people are the worst monsters.
Yeah, and like he, yes, you're dealing with a supernatural element right now, but he wasn't always that. Like, he was just like a normal guy walking down the street.
Yeah, he was killing people for 20 years. Mm-hmm. So I'm always just, I'm, now that we have two vampires with souls who are reacting to this idea of having a soul, and we see too a lot of Spike really trying to, like, we'll get to this scene, but really trying to figure out, like, why Angel does what he does when he doesn't think it's going to have any purpose. And comparing that processing of having a soul, of having that conscience, versus a human being who has that soul and still acts the way that monsters act.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, like everyone at Wolfram and Hart.
Mm-hmm. But this guy was literally so evil, he created the foundation for Wolfram and Hart. Like, that's literal foundation of that building he created. That's how evil he is. Yep. So let's talk about Spike and Angel, because everything when they are interacting is perfect and wonderful. They have this whole, and this is the best scene in the episode. Sorry, Brittany, we're just going to talk about it.
I will talk about it five times if you want me to.
But we get this interaction, this really wonderful interaction where it's very honest. Spike has learned about the Shanshu prophecy from Fred, and that makes him even more bitter towards Angel, that Angel apparently has this opportunity to become human. Angel, meanwhile, is like bitter towards Spike because he thinks Spike has had it too easy in getting his soul and all how hard it was for him for like a couple weeks, and then he was fine. While Angel was like, we saw how long it took him to deal with it. And then you just get like all this dislike they had for each other when they were evil. And you just start seeing these, this interaction start bubbling up. And we end up kind of having this really interesting discussion about, you know, Angel has been to hell, which this was a good reminder of that. He was there for, you know, 100 years, whatever, however long he was before he came out. And Spike is kind of having to contemplate this idea that no matter how much good he might do now that he has a soul, it's probably never going to be worth it. And Angel just frankly says, of course it's not ever going to be enough. And Spike's really having to contemplate what he is supposed to do at this point. What did you guys think about just this idea of Angel still thinks he is damned and Spike kind of coming to terms with that idea?
I wonder if Buffy's having gone to heaven, if that word's got around to Angel, is any influence on Angel believing that he won't go to heaven? Maybe he like had a chat with her when they met up again when she came back to life and she told him the full truth and he was like, oh yeah, the people there are way too nice. I'm still not that nice. Like, I'm just not going to get there. I don't know. I wonder why he's still in that mindset, because I'm in the mindset he would go to this universe's heaven. It doesn't make sense why he'd have to go to hell again. He's already suffered through that. Shouldn't I give him some brownie points?
I don't think it's so much that as it is, like, right now he's realizing, like, no matter how many times he's thought and tried to do his best, he's still lost everything. So, like, he has Cordelia's gone, Connor's gone, like, and he's tried, but everything he kind of touches either ascends to a higher being or becomes completely evil. Like, there's, you know, there's not a good track record with him for things working out. And so he's like, okay, I went through this whole trial, like he's talking about with Spike, I went through this whole trial of having my soul back and like being miserable and just struggling to get by and like then realizing that I could make it. And I made a ton of changes, like 4 seasons worth of changes to be a better person. Well, maybe longer than that, because if you count in Buffy too. And then Spike just like walks and does it. Like, you know, it's like, what is that? Like, why? Nothing's ever going to work out. He's like starting to just realize that the odds are stacked against him. And, you know, it's not fun. Any like it, like we saw with the werewolf thing. It's like, what is the point? Like, what, I guess one good deed like turns another, but like the good deeds always, even no matter how many he stacks up, there's always one big thing that comes and like bowls them over. So he's just tired, I think. Just like, you know, there's no light at the end of the tunnel. There's prophecies have always been wrong. And we've been exhausted by prophecies because either like a word is translated weird or there's another text that reveals something else or something.
Like the hamburger comes back.
Yeah. Exactly. Exactly. There's always a catch or fine print or a powers that be override. So mm-hmm. putting, like, you know, I think he's realizing, like, putting your faith and all of your, like, eggs in one basket on a prophecy, it isn't going to work. Like, why give up, like, you know, any idea that, like, something's going to come true? Like, get your hopes up in a sense. I don't think that's the right mentality to have. But I think that's where Angel is.
I think, too, it's a consequence of him having his soul in that he just doesn't think it's possible to find redemption for the sheer volume of evil that he did.
Right.
And he has had more chances. Like, he became Angelus again a couple times in the modern day. Like, I think this is his perception, too. I think, like, us looking at it from the outside can be like, you are genuinely a champion. Mm-hmm. Like, you are a hero. You deserve whatever reward goes to heroes. Angel, by virtue of who he is as Angel, cannot see that about himself. But it goes to the to his credit that when Spike is like, well, why do you keep doing good then if you don't think it's going to make a difference? And he's like, well, what else are you going to do?
Yeah. And
that makes, rats.
Yeah. So I like, I hate to admit this because I did do this week, but I watched an episode of Mom, and I'm very against the show Mom. I don't know why. I just feel like I shouldn't like it. But I watched an episode of Mom this week, and it's kind of reminding me of the plot of like the plot of the episode of Mom where like this. So it's all like, so it's about a mom and a daughter, Alice and Janney, Anna Faris, and they're both in AA, and like this group centers around like, you know, their friends within AA and like relationships outside of it. And, you know, it's kind of like like AA in a sense, like, you know, like why keep going if it's like, you know, like Angel, like basically relapsed into Angelus twice. And, you know, like, but why keep making the effort? Like, why didn't you just stay Angelus? If like, it's not going to make a difference, then why don't you just like, why wouldn't you just stay as Angelus and like have what would be considered a great time, like live in your life? I'd watch it, but you know, it's not the hero's struggle. So like, you know, like we may see him making all these changes, but in his mind, he's still and a little bit Angelus. Like that's never going to go away, even though like, you know, there was like that threat of like, we'll bury it, and like you so deep inside of Angel's mind, but like because of his soul, it's not, those memories are not going to just disappear, and he's still going to have that weight of like all the mistakes he made, but and the relapses that he had. And you know, he still sees himself as like, I'm that horrible person. Even though people are constantly telling me I'm not, it's that was his identity for so long that he's just stuck with it, no matter how many hundreds of years he's been without, you know, killing. But he's closer. He's closer to, oh, these people don't know that Angelus came back.
See, do they?
No,
do
they wouldn't, because he came back because of Connor, didn't he?
He came back because of Jasmine. Technically,
yeah.
The beast.
So, yeah.
So I think they do.
Yeah. So he is closer in his mind to a turn as Angelus and can't actually talk about that with any of these people. So he just came out of another Angelus spin, and like can't unload any of that on anyone because no one knows that Angelus came back.
I think Angel needs to like sit down with someone he trusts here, like whatever, Fred maybe, or Spike, you know, anyone that's been involved in all of this like Connor stuff, and just like have an interview with them and ask them in general like what they know, so he can know what he can talk about to the other people involved. I think that would be really helpful.
Oh, my poor.
Well,
Angel.
I think also there's something to the fact that we've talked about how we think Angel kind of at his core is not as good a person.
Right.
As like William was. Sucked. Yeah. But he makes the choice every day to fight his bad nature. Like, but we have seen he, even when he still has his soul, can do evil things. Like, remember when he locked all the lawyers in the room with Darla and Drusilla? Mm-hmm. Like, he still had his soul when he hit rock bottom back in season two. So he mm-hmm. is very conscious of, even when he has his soul, like there's a distinct darkness to him. Right. And he more, I think, than Spike has to actively be a good man. And I think that ties into some of his jealousy of Spike, because we've seen, like, we also get that line, like Fred calls him out of being jealous that Spike fell in love with Buffy. And I think part of it is probably that he knows he's genuinely not as good a person.
This is really spiraling. This is spiraling my mind over to the events of what Spike has done and how everyone has gotten over his attempted rape over Buffy, because he has a soul now, and how it's like he made the choice to get his soul is a big important thing because he was the evil vampire at the time. But then there's the chip. Yeah, there's a lot of interesting things to look into comparing Angel and Spike. And I think another point that's been made is that Spike can't lose his soul from having a pure moment of happiness. I believe they said that, and Angel obviously can. I feel like it still sticks around. Who knows? Willow's given him his soul back twice. Maybe that effect's worn off by now. Well, Angel that's got questioning his, the science, if you ask me. So I'm
Angel got that. His by a gypsy curse, and part of the curse was the happiness. Spike got his like through magic. There was no curse involved, so Angel can't have happiness because of the curse.
See, I think he can though. I think he's fine because of the two Willow installations. I think that that kind of like trumps those, because it's like that was for that bout of having a soul, and now that he's had it two other times since.
I mean, we saw him in that episode. What was it, like? No, like season two, like he got roofied, and that was supposed to mimic happiness, and he started turning into Angelus.
Yes, you're right. With that Starlet episode, yeah. I don't know, the Darla thing gave me hope because he like had sex with her, and I know we've talked about how sex isn't the thing that gives him the pure moment of happiness, and I guess that she wasn't enough to give him that, and that's why he didn't fully turn into a jealous, but he almost did, like the lightning started crashing. I'm curious, I wonder if they're gonna explore that some more, or I wonder if they're just gonna like keep it the same role. They could. I think they've opened up the door to it and giving him the souls again, because I know what you're saying with the roofie part, that part makes sense to me, but also they could play that off, they could write it off somewhere else. I think this is because I want him to be happy. I want him to end the series being purely happy with Cordelia. I don't think it's going to happen.
That's part of who Angel is that curse. Like, that curse doesn't go away because it's part of his character. He needs that to be the brooding.
Yeah. Otherwise,
that he is.
Yeah. Otherwise, it just doesn't make, it makes as much, without that, it makes as much sense as Wes still being so dark and brooding right now without the Connor kidnapping.
But let's talk a little bit more about that scene. And then we also get them like arguing with each other. Spike calls him Liam, which was amazing.
Oh my god.
And then Angel tells Spike that, like, because there's having this moment of understanding, like after they've had this argument, there's like the silent kind of moment of understanding, because Angel intimately knows what Spike is afraid of, because he's been to hell and he knows exactly what it is that is like waiting for Spike. And there's this moment of understanding. And then he says that he likes William's poetry.
Yeah, he's like, don't tell anyone
love.
This. No, that he's not
so
in love.
Good.
He's in so love. I think he's falling in love with him for the first time because he used to have lust for him. And now he's like, okay, wait, he's actually someone I can really get along with now that he has a soul, especially. Because think about it. He hasn't known him with soul. He didn't know William, did he?
No, he...
No.
He sired
Drusilla
someone.
Picked.
Yeah.
He's Spike's grand sire, because Angel sired Drusilla, who sired William.
Yeah, so I think he's falling in love with Spike's soul. That's how I'm going to put that.
You do not.
I think, I don't know, I love this scene in particular because the bickering and the deep conversation, like, they found a way, you know, to communicate with each other on a level that works for them. And, like, it wasn't like, you know, Spike didn't, they made comments, but they didn't have to be like, whoa, 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 why are we offloading all this stuff? It's like, you know, it was a natural, like, give and take. Like, I hate you, I hate you. Okay, wait, there's a little bit about this prophecy, and like, I'm really feeling the weight of the world and doing all this. And also, I kind of liked your poetry. Okay, bye. Like, you know, it was a small little moment of just like getting them to sit next to each other and not try to kill each other. And like, it just did so much. And I just liked watching them interact, because like, you know, it wasn't about Buffy, and it wasn't about, you know, like, it was about something that is currently affecting them both. And I'm sure like the Buffy stuff will come up later, which is fine. I think that's actually a pretty funny, could be funny, like, you know, give and take between the two of them. But I think that right now, you know, it was good to see them like arguing about something that's happening in the moment, and give a little bit more about what's going on in Angel's mind and what's going on in Spike's mind, because Spike is, you know, he's disappearing and he's going to a place that's not fun and not great. And Angel is sort of in this place where he's saying like, well, I'm resigned to that place. And Spike's like, okay, yes, but you don't want to go there. He's like, and you know, he's been there. Angel has. And so like, you know, it's like why we can't, it was sort of like this like aha, Oprah aha moment. Like maybe we shouldn't be resigning ourselves to this particular fate yet. You know, like maybe there's something more we could do. And if there isn't, what else could we have done with the time that we have?
We're basically relying on the writer's room to come up with a happy ending for these two characters. Much like Natalie was saying with Buffy, like her happy ending was losing the responsibility of being that sole in charge slayer now that it's spread out. So I guess for them, like it would probably be becoming human, living normal lives and being able to go to heaven. Now that we know heaven is like a goal and a thing in this universe, I could see that happening. I could, for both characters.
Who says they're going to get a happy ending?
Yeah.
I mean, I'm hoping, because I mean, Buffy gave me hope that they will, but Buffy also hasn't ended technically because she's still out there doing things during this show. So that didn't really feel like a series finale. So this will be a whole different beast. You're right. Because I think the end of Angel will define whether or not Buffy and Angel get a happy ending. The shows, the characters, everything. Because I still don't feel like that Buffy thing. Yeah, it was a bit happy, but like Anya's dead. That's a big deal for me. There's a lot going on there. They still have to explore. Maybe that's just, maybe we're in a never ending cycle of the comics. We're never going to get an ending to anything we ever like, because there's always going to be more.
I was going to say, the comics are canon.
Yeah, I know. And they also have Xander dating Dawn. So we're pretending they're not canon.
They're a thing that exists. It's true.
Unfortunately and fortunately, I guess, depending on your viewpoint.
So we also get Spike in fighting with Pavane. He kind of figures out he starts picking up some of Pavane's tricks to warp reality to his own rules. And he's kind of figuring out how if he concentrates hard enough, he can touch things. Like he writes Reaper on the shower, which was another one of those horror tropes that they played with. And then at the end, he like picks up the coffee cup. So he's figured out some ways to be like interacting with the world, though he has to concentrate really hard. So it's not something he can do all the time. But we really see, like, I thought it was interesting to watch him. Like he goes from completely vulnerable, it's like literally naked and like with hell breathing down his throat, to like his concentration comes back, like through sheer willpower he wills himself stronger and helps fight off Pavane, and ends up having to make the choice to save Fred, to take away his chance at becoming corporeal again, to stop this guy, this spirit, from killing Fred, who he's seems to really have come to care about, which there's another instance of Spike has become a good man.
I hope it's not romantic. I hope they can just keep this just a normal, like, hey, we're friends. We like each other. We're boys and girls, but it doesn't have to mix past that. Cause I don't like how we keep passing Fred around in romantic ways from character to character, meaning that, now that she's the only woman, we might as well give her a love interest. How about everyone? It's not interesting. It's not fun. It's not good. It doesn't show a lot of strength of character for others or for her. It makes it messy. I hope that he can just have that very platonic, normal, good relationship with her. I don't know if they're building toward that.
Yeah, I didn't read it like that. I read it as like a playoff of what they were talking, him and Angel were talking about. Like, you know, what are you going to do? Are you going to make your time here for yourself, or are you going to like continue to do things that will help people? And so he's saving Fred, and Fred is now a part of his life, and she's smart and she'll figure something out, you know? And he decided to not be selfish and do good. And I think that's great. Good job, Spike.
I mean, Spike's still in love with Buffy. So
yeah.
That's so, really, I don't think he's looking for a new girlfriend. I think Fred just likes him. Like, I don't think she's overly impressed by him. I think she just kind of likes that he's sassy and they can have some banter. And Spike appreciates that she's like the only one who actually talks to him like he's not dirt on the ground kind of thing. So I think there's just a friendly dynamic there. Like Fred has said, you know, she's like, I've told everyone you're worth saving. And she's like the only one saying that about him. So I think it's just a friendly dynamic. All right. So we end with Pavain becomes corporeal and they lock him away in permanent storage, but they gave him a window. But he's completely unable to move or interact with the world at all. And he's going to live forever just locked away in storage. Sucks to be him. Maybe you shouldn't have been a serial killer.
My question here is, what kind of evil is Eve? Is she less evil than this Pavain? Does she see him as just being a threat to Wolfram the Heart? And that's why she's like, I might as well do a thing, not even a good thing, but just a thing of locking him away so that my company is less under threat. Was that the idea there? Her involvement is what puzzled me.
I mean, he is like part of Wolfram and Heart, and he has been like messing with the souls of people who worked at Wolfram and Heart. And as we know, their contracts are supposed to go past death. So he's kind of messing with their contracts.
Yeah. It's just a lot. She's just avoiding a lot of paperwork by keeping him on the premises, I think.
She's starting to interest me when I don't want her to, because she's definitely not Lila. They're definitely trying to make her Lila. But it just, her being just around and not doing as much is what started to make me more interested in her, rather than when she's like, how do you know I'm either? Like, that stuff just didn't do it for me. But when she's like lying in wait here, almost as like she's waiting for her moment to strike, but in a very casual way, I buy into her a lot more.
Well, I guess we'll see what's going on with her.
Yeah.
If we even do, because she could just be what she looks like. Like, she could have just been talking a big game. She could still just be a person. She'd just pop up everywhere, and she'd just scare Fred here and tell her all of that evil corporate stuff, like, you're spending too much money. So that's where I see her role almost fitting. She could be there, but who knows? Maybe she's just, like, the mayor, and she's the giant snake just waiting to unzip. I guess we'll have to see.
Well, she's the conduit to the senior partners.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I wonder what, I just want to know her true form, I think. That's where I'm at. I want to know what she really looks like.
If she looks like anything different than than this.
Yeah.
All right. Any final thoughts on this episode before we move on to favorite scenes and favorite lines?
I just want more of these type of episodes. I thought this episode was really good, and I think that's why I'm excited to have more time, or I guess no availability, because I can watch a lot more of Angel. And this episode got me like really pumped to just, I wanted to keep going. So, just looking forward to the next couple of episodes.
Yeah, I liked this one a lot.
It was fun. It felt like a continuation of the episode where Spike's fighting with Robin. And there's all those flashbacks because it's Spike centered and it's building his character more. We're seeing him get to a place at the end of the episode. He loses the brainwashing in that episode. This episode, he loses the part where he fades away. It's all good and positive when it's Spike in my mind. It's weird to be at that place, but I'm 100% on the Spike train now, Natalie. Yes, I see your ship. I see the Spuffy. I see the Spangel. I just see the Spike in it all. He's good.
I really like how they're using him so far this season. And I just think his dynamic with Angel is so interesting and so fun to watch play out. So I think bringing him on was a brilliant choice.
Yeah. If only we weren't spoiled, like at season one of Buffy.
Yeah, that would have been a delightful surprise to just suddenly Spike shows up. Yeah. What?
It would have surprised me because I really would have thought he would have died in Buffy.
You would have been spoiled in the opening credits.
Yeah, the opening credits. Like, yeah. I was like, wow, already? Because I was thinking, I'm so like, maybe he doesn't come in, like, you know, right away. Like, I didn't know how long it was going to take for Spike to show up. And I'm like, oh, well, there he is in the credits. So now, maybe.
And actually, one more thing. Would I be wrong to think that Harmony would need to be involved in any of this drama? Is it going to be too busy if you bring in another character here? Does she have to care about all the stuff, or is she just going to pop in when she needs to?
I think she's a good, just we'll use her when we can type of character.
Mm-hmm. Because, like, this is her Blondie Bear coming back into existence. You think that she would be really happy about that. Maybe
well,
next
she
episode.
She, and then,
maybe next
like,
episode
Spike
she just had to pay
jerk.
Off. Yeah. But that's the thing. She always chases after him no matter what.
I just don't think she was. Her tone is particularly appropriate for this episode.
Mm-hmm.
Would like, ruin the spookiness of it a bit,
yeah.
Huh?
This is meant to be, like, a horror film episode, and she is everything opposite of that. So,
yeah.
I don't think she would have fit in this episode. All right, let's move on to favorite scenes and favorite lines. Mitch and Brittany picked the one best one.
But
I was trying to be original and pick another one. Mitch. mine, since Brittany took the best one, was when they're looking through this book about dark souls and Gunn is like, Angel, you're in it like four times. And Angel gets all offended because he's like, but I didn't even have a soul. How can I be in the dark souls book? Like he's, so there's another instance of where he's all offended about something. And it's just, he's so cute. I love him. Mm. All right, Brittany, we're turning it over to you.
So the best scene of this entire episode was Angel and Spike on the couch, particularly their bickering back and forth at the beginning before they talk about anything. It's like, you know, you're always interrupting and you know, it's so great. I'm like I said before, I'm looking forward to seeing more of their dynamic, not even necessarily like having scenes like this, but just having them, you know, kind of fight back and forth a little bit. Like even if it's in the middle of another conversation, I just love their dynamic together.
And I think we really see that no matter how annoyed Angel gets, he doesn't actually want Spike to like disappear forever.
Yeah,
they're old friends in the very least. I mean, they kind of bicker like an old married couple too, so that you can tell that they at least appreciate having a shared history with each other, because having that around kind of gives you a comfortability, because you're like, oh yeah, you've been through the same things as me, you like ripped half of Europe apart, that was fun.
The good old days.
All right, and Mitch picked the favorite. Same scene.
Same.
Anything else you'd like to add about that scene, Mitch?
They're beautiful, and maybe Spike will get enough gusto to hold a hand, stroke a cheek, kiss a lip. Who knows? We'll see. We'll see how corporeal he wants to be for his bae, Angel. And or Buffy. I'll take either at this point. Sorry, Caitlin.
Or both.
Yeah, like all of the above. Like, just run with it.
More threesomes, less love triangles.
I said that last week, and it's still very true.
That's my favorite motto. And yes. I think it applies well in this situation.
It extremely does. It really does. Because everyone is so, like, melodramatic about their depth of love for each other in all three of those relationships. It's like, okay, so then just all have each other then. Like, there shouldn't be conflict here.
I'm into it. All right. Favorite lines. Mine was, you know what? Let's go to Brittany first because mine comes right after.
Okay. Brittany's. So mine is very long. But it's because it's basically the whole conversation between them. And Spike saying, never much for small talk, were you? Always too busy trying to perfect that brooding block of wood mystique. God, I love that, sarcastically said. And Angel goes, not as much as I loved your nonstop yammering. And then they sort of like fight back and forth where Spike is like, the way you always had to be the big swingy swaggering around, barking orders. And Angel says, never listening. And Spike says, always interrupting. And then Angel closes by saying, and your hair, what color do they call that? Radioactive? And Spike, this is where the best part comes in, says, never much cared for you, Liam, even when we were evil.
I also love too, that's kind of a callback to the Buffy finale, because he called him Captain Peroxide.
Yeah.
So good. I just love that he called him Liam.
I know.
And I'm wondering when he found out that Angel's human name was Liam.
Yeah. I mean, because Darla didn't remember hers, but Angel definitely remembers his. Spike definitely remembers his.
I bet Drusilla figured it out in her craziness and told him.
Did she even have another name? Was she just always Drusilla? Sounds very evil to just be born with that name. I don't know.
I don't know. I don't know that we know.
Yeah. Hmm.
All right. My favorite line comes right after that because they hit this kind of pause. And then Angel goes, yeah, I never told anybody about this, but I liked your poems. And Spike kind of gets all offended and goes, you like Barry Manilow.
So even Sold Spike knows how horrible William the Bloody was.
So good. Like, that Angel's trying to be nice. And you like Barry Manilow. Just so.
My favorite Angel character trait.
He's such a nerd. That's just like the war cry about Angel. He's such a nerd. And it's the best. All right. And Mitch, your favorite line.
Mine is the very sassy medium who, before she starts her reading, she goes, now I have Pilates at the crack of why am I awake? So we're going to move this right along. I was like, same girl, let's get this reading done with. We got to go exercise. Come on.
I was like, I am going to use that when I get up at 6 a.m. for work. I'm going to say I am up at the crack of why am I awake now?
Why am I awake now? I was just sad when she died. I didn't think she deserved to die. She was just there to be sassy and have a reading or two. It looks like she was very experienced. She knew how to like deal with spirits. And all of a sudden, Vivain decided to take her. And I was like, ah, because she looked like she suffered. Like, it was not an easy death because she was still alive until she, like, vomited blood all over Fred. It was very unpleasant.
Yeah.
I know. Fred. And Fred didn't even get any consolation. They just skipped right past it. They're like, oh, well, deal with it.
No wonder she took a shower. Jeez.
Yes. Yes. She's just like, you people suck.
I was trying to figure out why she was in the shower at this time, but duh, because she just got blood spit all over her.
Yeah.
That makes a lot more sense.
That's fun.
All right. That wraps up our discussion for Angel this week. If you guys have any thoughts about the episodes or anything we had to say about the episodes, email them to us at rewatchable.podcast@gmail.com. Tweet us @re_watchable. Comment on this post on hypeable.com or find us on Tumblr at rewatchablepodcast.tumblr.com. And you can also rate us on iTunes. And if you rate us 5 stars, then Karen will awkwardly grab a family photo from your house if it means you'll have a better day.
Aww, that's sweet.
Always there for us, Karen.
Except
be our friend in pottery today. Class. Except for today, yeah. That's true.
Yeah, we're calling Karen out because she was supposed to be on with us tonight.
It's okay. Yep. We made it through.
We did it. All right. We have some listener feedback. Brittany and Mitch, would you like to take the first couple tweets?
Sure. So from Twitter, Mariah, not Carrie, at Mariah Lovegood says, maybe in 10 weeks when Angel is finished, at least some of you will feel ready to watch the movie. It's nothing like the show. It's way more camp than season one. Oof. I don't know.
Oh my God,
I
love the movie so much. It's so bad and it's amazing.
I'm nervous to watch it.
And, it was on TV once. I didn't watch it.
Really?
And I know that you guys talked about the movie a little bit last week, but I like caught the first couple minutes of it, or I don't even know how far into it was. There was cheerleading happening and I was like, oh boy. I was like, you know what? Maybe not. And I turned it off.
I mean, if you go into it knowing that it's over the top, ridiculous, and crazy, and campy, that's the best way to enjoy it.
Yeah. I mean, and also, it is not the live action Avatar, The Last Airbender movie.
Yes.
So, anything is better. Because I promised to watch that movie, and I still have not seen the whole thing, because it was so bad.
You will never get that time back.
I was so angry. It was only 20 minutes, and I was so furious. I'm like, I cannot watch this.
I watched that in the theater, and I'm still mad.
Are you still fighting for your money back?
I really need my money back. But more importantly, I will never get those 2 hours back.
Oh,
and so that's really what I regret.
I saw a midnight screening and I turned 16 so that I could drive home after midnight seeing that movie. It was like a celebration, but it wasn't because it wasn't fun.
Everything was awful.
Yeah, definitely was.
But yes, the Buffy movie is really not serious, which an Avatar was trying to be. So there's that.
I'm picturing it being like Clueless.
Clueless is fantastic and very serious. So,
and then we had two more tweets from Megan B at Motley a 91, who said, "I love this movie. It's so 90s." And Andrea B at Timey Wimey Daffy said, "The movie will make you appreciate the show more. That's for sure." I do appreciate the show. I know that I didn't at first, but maybe I'll hate the movie even more because it's like going back farther than the puppet episode to even worse 90s camp. So I don't think I'm going to like it, but I may have to watch it now.
I mean, I haven't seen it in years, but from what I remember, like, it's not serious enough to hate is how I feel about it. We also have a comment on Hypeable from Rookbat3, who says, "I was kind of anti-spoiled for the finale of Buffy. Back before I ever started watching Buffy, I thought I had heard that Willow dies at some point during the series. I can't remember where I got that impression, but throughout the whole series, I kept waiting for it to happen. At the end of season 6, I thought it was finally here, but nope. Then we got all the way to the finale, and Willow was still around, so I knew she was going to die. Whoops."
Wasn't it Karen that thought that, like, Sokka died in Avatar the Last Airbender as well? Or no, she thought that Mako died in Korra.
Yeah, that's right.
And he didn't, and then she was like, oh. It's kind of fun, like, being spoiled accidentally in the wrong way, and then having it not be true. It's fun, because then you're, like, wrong the whole time, and you really don't know what's coming next. It goes against your expectation.
But it's kind of annoying because it messes with your expectations and it colors how you're watching the show.
Yeah, you're kind of like, nothing matters for this character.
And it's like, oh, wait, they lived. Just kidding.
Yeah.
All right, and we also got a review on iTunes, 5 stars from Gizmo2667, saying, "Love this. I can so relate to their sense of humor. I've been listening to the Buffy podcast, and I crack up with all the great comments." So we will make sure Karen gets on that reward, Gizmo2667.
Yeah. One family photo coming your way.
All right, and that leaves us to wrap up, as usual, with our newbie predictions. We've got Brittany's brainstorms and Mitch's musings for Angel 505, Life of the Party, and 506, The Cautionary Tale of Numero Cinco.
Oh, sure. So that second one, no clue.
Yeah, is that supposed to be like a saying? Like, is that a movie or a book I'm supposed to know that it's referencing? Like, The Cautionary Tale of... something.
I don't know, but I think it would make more sense if it was episode 5, not episode 6.
What do you say about it? Oh, because it's episode 6. Yeah. Got it.
Or maybe it's in, actually, something could happen in Life of the Party, and then episode 6 is like, okay, what did we learn from episode 5 that we're not going to do in episode 6? That would be pretty clever. But Life of the Party, I mean, that has
zombies.
Has Lorne written all over it. Because he has yet to have an episode that is just him. You know, he is the life of the party. And he doesn't have, like, carnitas anymore. You know, what's he been doing with this time?
Carnitas, yeah. I feel like it's going to be reincarnations and or coming back from the dead. And then, but we're having a party. Like, we're having just... you know, another pancake party, whatever. Eating some more lettuce wraps, as you do. And then the zombies attack.
Or like they're stuck in a party that they can't get out of. It's just a party nonstop.
Yeah. That would make sense too.
But I think that, I'm hoping that they were smart enough to do 506 being like lessons learned from 505 in like a tongue-in-cheek way. Because I think that would make sense.
Or do we have 5 pancakes right now? Minus Cordelia, minus Spike. So then you have Fred Gunn, Wes, Angel,
Lorne.
There's Lorne. So there's 5. So we could just be, I don't know, Maybe they're all numbered. Who knows?
Well, Angel's number one.
Cordelia would have been number two.
Wes and Gunn are fighting out for number two.
Yeah, I guess. And Fred, since she's had a little bit less time, three. But it has she'll to be three, right?
Yeah, yeah, definitely three.
Lauren has to be five, so that means four is...
Well, it's either Wes or Gunn.
Yes, yeah. So five is probably Lauren. Oh, poor baby.
Or they're all fighting over who is going to be five.
Right.
Maybe they have to, I don't know. Who knows?
I feel like this is MySpace top five friends all over again.
Oh, boy. There's nowhere to go from that. So let's just call it, a podcast, guys.
All right.
So we will be back next week with another group to talk about these two episodes. Find out if we are talking about MySpace top five friend choices or not. We'll see. Until next time, my name is Caitlin.
I'm Mitch.
And I'm Brittany.
Thanks for listening, everyone. Bye.
Bye.
Bye. Thank you.